Greetings, everyone. It's the weekend, and so that means another episode of the podcast is dropping. This weekend, I'm introducing you to a very dear friend indeed, Drew Ayotte. And I've known Drew for about 11 years. He's one of the first people I met in Santa Fe, and we've been there for each other through thick and thin. I think when you begin a friendship with someone, you never know which direction the road is going to take you. And as you'll hear in our conversation, Drew and I really had no idea what was coming for both of us in the future. Now, you know, it's really hard to distill a human being down into just a few words. But suffice it to say that Drew is wonderful, funny, engaging, hilarious, has lots of things to say, is very certain in his beliefs, which are both generous but also profound. But out in the world, he's also a social impact marketing and communication specialist. And just a few years ago, he moved out of state from New Mexico to Pennsylvania. I said goodbye to Drew with a lot of tears because, you know, when you have these dear friends that live close to you, you kind of just expect them to always be around. But Drew and I have continued our friendship. We love Marco Polo. We leave each other little messages every day or every other day or every week. And that, for me, is what friendship means. So now, without further ado, here's my interview with my dear friend, Drew.
I found Enzo on the border of Texas and Mexico, and I had a roommate at the time that was from Laredo, and we went down to, I think, a cousin's wedding, and we were down there, and there's a lot of stray animals that are down there, and Enzo was roaming with a pack of dogs, all different sizes. Roaming with a pack of dogs with his brother. His brother was the same size as him. He was just all beige. And he and his brother broke away from the pack. Mangy looking street dogs came over and said hi. And we're like, oh, cute. Hi, hi. Like, all right. Well, they went back to the pack and went back into, you know, roaming the streets.
I just have to say that I'm so excited about interviewing my guest today. I normally don't start the podcast out like this, but it's a dear friend who I've wanted to interview for forever. And he hasn't been putting me off, but he's been making me wait. And today's the day we finally are able to talk. Very exciting. My friend Drew, I've got him. He's a captive. He cannot get away. And so, first of all, you have to know that I love Drew, and he's been such a staunch supporter of mine and so lovely and amazing in my life. And I kind of wanted everyone else that I know or who listens to this podcast to meet him. So here we go. Here we go. So Drew, I'm so excited you're here. And the first question I always ask everybody is, how do you self-describe? If you had to introduce yourself to people at a party or a conference, you just had to go up to someone in the street and introduce yourself. How would you do that?
You know, I should have been prepared for this question because I've heard you ask it. Now that you ask me, I'm like, oh, how would I? I think instead of a verbal introduction, I think I bring an energy with me that allows people to feel comfortable. And I know this about myself now. As I've gotten older, I've learned that that's what attracts people to me. And it's okay to say that. So, but if I were to put a verbal introduction, how would I describe myself? I am a friendly, charismatic, creative, and I don't know, funny individual. And I'm often really excited to get to know other people and find those little moments where I can relate to them and I can empathize with them. But Gosh, I don't know if I answered your question correctly, but I hope that was enough.
Oh, yeah. And you have the world's cutest dog.
Yes, I can confidently say that. And he's watching me as I'm speaking because he thinks there's someone in the room. So well, he is present. He is present with us.
Yeah. And I've house sat him multiple times and I didn't want to give him back. And I had to, and it broke my heart each and every time. His name is Enzo and I call him Zoberg because I feel like he's such a little man and he could be a general if he had his own little dog army. And so his name would be General Zoberg. It sounds more authoritative. So.
And another fun fact for listeners, Kirsten and Enzo share a birthday. So just so that everyone out there can hear that.
It's a true story. And he always gets better presents. As he should. Well, you know, where did you grow up? I already know the answer to this question, but my listeners don't.
Yeah, I grew up in Western Maine in a very small town called Norway. And for anyone that's not familiar with Maine, there's many towns named after countries there. And it's very unique and very strange and weird, but I love it. And yeah, I grew up in Western Maine. My whole family is all back there. They're all within like a stone's throw of one another. But yeah, that's my home.
And it's ridiculously beautiful. And your mother has a giant garden that I've seen pictures of. Now, I was having dinner with a friend last night and she was telling me about someone who lived in Maine that she knew. And she said, oh, I think he's been a Mainer his whole life. And she said, wait, is that the right word? Is it Mainer? And I said, well, you know, wouldn't you say if someone's from Vermont, a Vermonter? And she said, oh, yeah. And I said, but maybe they say Nor'easter, like I'm a Nor'easter. So what do you say about people from Maine?
Well, you got the word right. Mainer is right, but you got to drop the R. So it's Maina.
Maina.
Maina. And Nor'easta is a storm. So we're going to get a really bad Nor'easta. It's going to snow and you know, you're going to get snowed in and make sure you got the shovels handy.
I always talk to my ex that I wanted to go to Maine and live there for a long time. And he always said, that's where people go to die. And I was like, really? I did not have that idea of Maine. I mean, I don't know if he was saying maybe it's all the retirees or whatever, but is there truth to that?
I wouldn't say people go there to die, but some people just don't leave because it is so beautiful. It is so beautiful. Nickname is Vacation Land, which kind of a double-edged sword. And a lot of people go to Maine to vacation, especially in the summertime. And the state needs it, but it's also like, all right, it's after Labor Day, get the hell out of here. But no, I don't think people go there to die. People go there to live.
Yeah. I was like, whatever, dude. I'm not going to listen to you. I should have broken up with him when he said that, because it was so obviously a lie. But I did want to ask, so there is this, and I've heard this from multiple people, that unless you lived in Maine for 400 years, you will never, never, never be considered a local, that Mainers are very proprietorial about their state, about who lives there. You're not a local. If you live there 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, it doesn't matter. You will always be an outsider. Is that true?
I don't know if I can attest to that. I really don't. I think, gosh, there's a lot of locals that have just, you know, grown up there and stayed there. But I guess that statement I could say is similar to other places that I've lived over the years. You know, I've lived in a few different states for, you know, 5+ years. And I feel like after that 5-year mark, you really start to adapt to the culture. And can you call yourself a local? I would say, yeah, I would call myself a local after about 5 years. But in Maine, I think if you can survive some, you know, extreme weather events and you can really know how to, we call it roughing it, like you have no power and you've got to you know, make repairs on your home or fix your car. And it's just learn how to be self-sustaining. I think if you know how to do that, I think the locals will accept you pretty quickly. I know that people will say this about their home state and their hometowns, but they're like, oh, people are so friendly and they're so welcoming. They'll give the shirts off their backs. But in Maine, that is 110% been my experience. People are very friendly and welcoming, and they will help you regardless of how much effort it'll take. And I think that's something that was instilled in me from a very young age. And my parents are still that way. And I'm really grateful that I had that upbringing. So I would say I disagree with that statement. I think Mainers will accept you if you know how to live in that land.
Thank you. I'm really curious. Now I've heard winters are potentially a nightmare from hell up there. And so my question is, do you have a favorite winter memory from when you're a kid?
Oh yeah. And any Mainer that's listening to this will know the ice storm of 98. So winters have gotten incredibly much more mild over the years, because we have this thing called climate change, and it's real, y'all. Science is real. But when I was a kid, we had the ice storm of 98, and it was this perfect weather conditions where the temperature was just hovering above freezing. And so all the trees collected, I mean, inches of ice on the branches, and that collected weight. I mean, so many trees came down, knocked out power to thousands, hundreds of thousands of residents. We had power crews coming in from other states. But many people were without power for a very long time. I was fortunate enough that I was brought up in a household where my dad was a small engine mechanic. And so we had a generator. People would drop off generators, lawnmowers, ice augers, I mean, you name it, any small engine, they bring it to my dad. And that's still his side gig. But we had a generator at that time, so we were able to keep our refrigerator running and, you know, keep some basic lights on. But my brother and I would bring fresh water to the neighbors. We would go down the street and shovel out our neighbors. We had this neighbor that we called the Catman. This man had many cats, feral cats just living on the land. He was very sweet. He kind of lived in a shack that he built, kind of sitting away from the road, and he didn't bother anyone. Like, no one cared. But lived very minimally. And so one of our tasks were to walk down the street. And we had snow blowers. I'd bring a snow blower. My brother bring a shovel. And we'd, you know, unbury the Catman's front yard or access way to his house. But that storm, I remember, I mean, we were out of school for weeks. So we were like, yay, vacation. But it was a lot of work. It was a lot of work.
And there you are, kind of testifying to the Mainers' capacity to help other people, you know, and show up for other people. Because what I think I'm hearing is that Mainers show up for other people. And that's what is kind of seen and admired and will get you accepted into the community. And, you know, it would be nice if that was the case in the rest of the world. So,
yeah, it's true. It is true. One of the things I love most about winter, and I've shared this over the years, is when I went to college, I went to college in Portland, Maine, just about an hour away from where I grew up. And I remember walking into the bar, you know, a brewery or a pub in the middle of the winter. And there was this sense of camaraderie the moment you walked in. Everyone knew it was bone chilling cold outside and it was miserable. But when you walked in that space and you know, took off your jacket, your scarf, your hat, you just took it all off. It was just like welcome, you know, you felt the sense of welcome all around you. And it was like the most comforting feeling. Despite it being so miserable outside, I really remember that as being such a good memory of growing up in Maine. And when you got snowed in, like if you didn't move your car on a snowbank and the plows came by and your car was covered, you just saw this big hump of snow and you're like, oh, there's a car under there. I think that's mine. Neighbors will come out with shovels and they'll help dig you out. They'll push your car. I mean, it's just a... It was such a wonderful place to grow up. And I really, I miss those days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm curious, did you grow up in a religious household? What did that look like for you and your family? And then how has it kind of evolved over time for you?
So short answer, I did not grow up in a religious household. The only time that we ever said grace was usually around Thanksgiving. I think I remember occasionally we would say grace at my, we called her Grammy Bumpus, who was my great grandmother. I was fortunate enough to grow up the majority of my childhood and youth with both of my great grandparents, two great grandmothers, who took care of me and my brother and my cousins, but also raised my mom and her siblings. And they lived next to each other as well. So it was nice when we saw one, we saw both. But no, I didn't grow up in a religious household. I think my household was, we were spiritual. We were taught, you know, to have solid values and right from wrong and treat each other with respect. Like just like those basic foundational elements of, I think what religion teaches a lot of people. On occasion, we did go to church. It was a congregational church, and the pastor, I went to high school with both his daughters. So we kind of knew this guy, and he would pull out a guitar and he would play songs in front of everyone. And he would talk about everyday things that happened in our lives and relate it to the Bible, related to Jesus. And it was, to me, I never had a bad experience going there. My parents never forced us to go. They asked, do you want to go to church Sunday? And my brother and I would say like, I just want to be outside. They're like, okay, no big deal. But when we did go, it was such a positive experience. And after church, everyone would go into the basement and there'd be, what do they call it? Coffee hour. And everyone would just bring a plate of snacks and they'd share and they'd talk amongst each other. And it was just a really small, tight-knit community. And I you know, now that I'm older, I kind of miss that. I took it for granted when I was a kid because I felt like, oh, there's a bunch of old people in my community. Not that I hated it going there, but I'm like, I really would love to have that sense of community again.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are really wanting that community, that sense of belonging, that sense of being a part of something where, like you were talking about, entering the bar, taking off your hat, your scarf, your coat. I think a lot of people are really, you know, when you went into that bar, you felt like you were home. You were welcomed into warmth, into friendship, into belonging. And I think a lot of people are looking for that also outside of bars and other places. And that's why churches, or not even necessarily churches, but, you know, worship spaces or just spaces for people. We need more spaces for people to become once a month and feel like they belong, that they can come somewhere where they're safe and they can find a new friend or talk to someone they haven't seen in a month or whatever. So yeah. I totally get that. And so how would you say you orient yourself towards the universe now or towards spirit or whatever kind of language you'd use?
I use the term universe. I don't know if I believe in one God or multiple gods, but I do know in my soul there is a higher power. There is something that guides us, that comforts us, that watches over us, whether that's our ancestors. I believe that our ancestors and our loved ones that have passed, you know, that energy remains with us. And I've felt that. But I use the term universe frequently. And to go back, something that I just thought of now is we're talking about the sense of community and belonging and gathering. Over the last, I don't know how many years I've been away from home, about 20 years. Every time I go home, my dad will have a fire. So I think fire brings people together, in Maine especially. And Mainers that hear this, they'll be like, oh yeah, fire, bond. Some people call them bonfires. Gathering at a fire is like gathering around a table for a meal. In my head, and that's a very unique thing to Maine. And yes, I've experienced it in other states and regions that I've lived, but Maine is, there's something about fire that brings people together. And that's been my family's gathering place.
I love that. I have noticed that when I'm producing my podcasts, I say, I love that a lot, but that is because I genuinely love most things. And the idea of family gathering around the fire, it's such an archetypal image, but it's also a beautiful image. So, I mean, there's lots of things to love in this world, lots of things to maybe question or despise, but certainly lots of things to love. Well, I want to go back to Grammy Bumpus. Okay. How did she get that name? What kind of person were your great grandparents? I've really never met anyone who knew their great grandparents. I must know.
So Bumpus is my mother's maiden name. So that's her last name. Grammy Bumpus, her name is Frances. And I've heard this shared with other friends periodically throughout my life, but she was a woman of faith. She was religious, not like in your face faith, but just she had her routine, her practices. This woman was the kindest, gentlest soul I have ever met. And when she passed and my whole family got together and we were putting together her obituary, everyone thought about, like, did anyone ever see her mad or upset? And we kind of looked around the room and everyone thought, no. And I think there were two instances where we can recall her getting a little upset and not even angry, like slightly upset. And I was one of those reasons. I was a very hyperactive child. Okay. I was the youngest of my, youngest in my family, youngest of my generation of cousins. I had many younger cousins, but there's a big, age gap between me and the next ones. But, she would have us bake cookies with her and I was acting out and she was telling me to do something and I was just not listening because I was doing something rambunctious. And I remember she grabbed the spoon out of my hand very forcefully. And that was enough for me to be like, oh, gosh, she's upset. But that was it. That was the only time, one of the only times in her entire life, and she looked to be in her 80s, that anyone can remember her being upset. She was heavy into gardening. She was the matriarch of my family. She was just such a wonderful, wonderful person. So calm and so welcoming too. She loved everybody. Didn't matter who you were, where you came from, what your beliefs were. You were welcome in that home. And that farmhouse that she lived on, my parents now live there. And so that legacy has definitely been carried on throughout the years. That's been the family meeting place for all holidays. And it's such a wonderful space.
Well, I'm curious, did your great-grandmother, was it her parents who emigrated or where did your family come from?
That's a good question. My dad's family is French Canadian. So they came down from Canada. My mother's family, I think my great grandmother, her family goes back a few more generations in Maine. They grew up close to Bar Harbor, Bahaba, for any Mainers listening, in a little town called Surrey. And so that goes back a few generations. But her husband that she met, I think they were fairly newly immigrated to the United States. They were Welsh and mixture of Western European countries.
Yeah. I was going to say maybe Scottish or British, and they landed in Surrey, which is like such a British name. I mean, my God, can you get any more British than that? I think not. Me thinks not. Well, how did your great grandparents end up living next to each other? That is really strange.
Oh gosh. So my dad's family, funny enough, my dad's family all lives on one road next to each other. And my mom's family, and they're just a town over in Oxford. My mom's family, so Grammy Bumpus moved into that farmhouse, I don't know when, long, long time ago. And Nana, who's my other great grandmother, it's my mom's mom's mom. I think she bought that house to live close to her daughter, which lived across the street. So three family members, two next to each other, one across the street. My mom and her siblings grew up across the street from both of her grandparents, if that makes any sense. So it was kind of a little triad of houses on top of this hill in Norway, Maine.
It sounds like people actually liked each other.
Yeah, I think that's safe to say. Yeah, there's some conflict, just like any family, but yes, I think overall they wanted to be close to each other. So
I'd love to ask you the main question of the podcast, which is, you already know what it is, but I would love for you to share a story or stories. It can be multiple. We can talk as long as you want about anything magical or miraculous, maybe even mysterious, that you think you've encountered in your life or seen or experienced. I'd love to hear whatever you want to share.
Well, there's this one story that I've shared a few times over the past couple years, but it's definitely a story of magic for me. So earlier in the episode, we talked about Enzo, my little dog. And I know people share a bond with their pets, and Enzo happens to be, he's 13. I've had him for 12 of those 13 years. And we share a bond that I've never experienced before with any other pet that I've grown up with. And there's this one story that I think back to that just really speaks to me. So I'm 6 years in remission from stage 4 cancer, just hit 6 years last month. And while I was going through the chemo process, I think I was just finishing my first round of chemo. And it was the time where, you know, my hair was starting to fall out and I was incredibly sick, very weak. And I would do outpatient therapy throughout the week. So I'd go and get chemo for a good 5 hours and I'd come home and it was just, it was awful, but absolutely awful. But right around the end of my first round, I came home from chemo and I was so sick that I just couldn't move. I was just on the bathroom floor and time just kind of slipped away from me. And I started to get dark out, and I was like, all right, I have two choices. I can either get up, walk to my bed, which is in Santa Fe. There's multiple levels in my home. So there's a step down from the bathroom and then a step up to the living room and then another step up to my bedroom. So I'm like, even though it doesn't sound like many stairs, you know, I was having to hold onto the walls to move. So I'm like, all right, that option's out. So option B, I guess I can just stay here in the bathroom. And I pulled the bath mat down and I covered my body with it. And Enzo, my little stray chupacabra little dog, is the queen of comfort. He loves to be comfortable. And so, you know, he will gather pillows and blankets and make a nest, you know, to be the most comfortable creature in this world. But Enzo came into the bathroom and he curled up next to me and he stayed with me the entire night on the Saltillo tile bathroom floor. I was covered with a bath mat and a towel, and he stayed there with me through the whole night. And I just, sorry, hearing the story just, it just makes me feel like that bond that we shared was so incredible. But that was definitely a moment that I will never forget. And leading up to my diagnosis, I never heard this before about how people's pets and dogs can often sense decay and death and sickness. And I remember his behavior being a little bit different with me. He was much more attentive. He would follow me around much more than he had in previous years. Because I think he sensed something. He knew when I was in pain. And I went through a year of excruciating pain before I knew what was going on. And I guess I never acknowledged his behavior changing until someone had shared that with me. But yeah, that's the first story that comes to mind when I think of magic.
Yeah, I do. Bonds. I do want to say that I took the best picture Enzo has ever had his entire life. I just want to acknowledge that it's makes
true.
He looks like a little general in the sunset. Also, what do we call? I mean, he's small. He's a smaller dog, just for everyone who's listening.
Yes.
But he is thick, and that is thicc. I mean, he is like thick. So when he gets on the bed with you and he's made his little nest, and if you want to shift at any time during the night, he is.
Forget it.
I know. He's, what do you call him? The log?
A log, or like he's like a cement brick? Like a.
He is.
Like, how is this little he's maybe 15 pounds, 15.2 pounds. My goodness. I'm like, how have you anchored yourself to these sheets?
It's kind of astonishing. So just the fact that he would come lay with you in the bathroom is testament to your relationship with him. And I have to say that I know the story of how you found him, and I think that's miraculous. So will you share that story?
Yeah, I found Enzo on the border of Texas and Mexico. And I had a roommate at the time that was from Laredo. And we went down to, I think, a cousin's wedding. And we were down there, and there's a lot of stray animals that are down there. And Enzo was roaming with a pack of dogs, all different sizes, roaming with a pack of dogs with his brother. His brother was the same size as him. He was just all beige. And he and his brother broke away from the pack. Mangy looking street dogs came over and said hi, and we're like, oh, cute. Hi. Like, all right. Well, they went back to the pack and went back into, you know, roaming the streets. The next day, we're on the opposite side of town, and we see the same two little dogs. I don't know if it was the same pack of dogs, but we saw those two dogs. And they, once again, came over, said hi. They're all sweet. I mean, covered in fleas and ticks, but I'm like, okay. And my roommate had this wild idea of like, do you want to bring them back to Austin with us? I'm like, okay. Meanwhile, these dogs had never been in a car before. So they were like shaking, foaming at the mouth, like just freaking out because we loaded them into this car in these cages. And they're like, who are these strangers taking us from our street home? But Enzo's brother got adopted, I believe, by the neighbor. And poor little Hugo, he was tormented by Enzo, and my roommate had two other dachshunds at the time, so he was sort of the runt. But it wasn't long until Enzo anchored himself in my bed, and it was over after that. I'm like, you and I are going to start a long journey together.
I mean, there's something really gorgeous about that story of being in a place that you're unfamiliar with, that isn't your home. And I love the audacity of seeing this dog on one side of the city and then going to the opposite side of the city. And here's this dog that approaches you twice. It's almost like an opportunity or an offering, even though, and it is almost if Enzo sensed the life you were going to live together and was like, hey, here I am. And then your audacity with like, let's get some cages and load these wild dogs into our car.
Yeah, because I mean, let's just add two more dogs to the household. You know, let's have a little dog parade in Austin. And that's what we did. And it was fun. Enzo came with me to anyone that's been to Austin. There's every restaurant has a patio, you know, a picnic table thrown out, you know, on the street. And he would come with me and hang out on patios and hang out at picnic tables. He would steal other dogs' toys. He's very possessive of toys. And so we, on a few occasions, I would catch him digging holes underneath the fence and stealing the dog's toys from the neighbor who had a very large dog. Like, when you look at the dog, it's intimidating, but I think Enzo was like, I'm not scared of you. I'm going to take what I want.
I think it's so important to know that he is the belle of the ball, no matter where you go. So once he enters a room, everybody's like, oh my God, oh my God. And they're just like fawning over him because I've seen it happen more than once. And often when I bring up your name and I said, you know, my friend Drew, they'll be like, oh my God, with the amazing dog. And I'm like, yes. I mean, you were just identified with your dog, Enzo. Right.
It was approached.
Yes.
I was approached the other day, actually, by this woman that I had met once. She came over to me and she's like, you're Enzo's dad, right? Yes, that is me. Yes, you remember my dog before me. But yes, you got that right.
That's the reality of your life. It's like... Would you like to share any other stories?
The other thing that I thought of, and as I've listened to other episodes where you've had other guests on, I guess I feel like magic and miracles and not strangeness, but I feel like it's all around me. I feel like it's happened to me throughout the course of my life, where I'll ask the universe for help, and I will beg and plead and ask for help. And, you know, it may not be immediate, but at some point there is always a point in time where something happens and I realize like somebody heard me, somebody heard my cries for help and came to my assistance. And it's too, I don't want to say coincidental, but it's too miraculous to not pay attention to that. And I know I'm being really vague and general here, but I'm just trying to think of like specific instances where I can recall.
Well, I was going to say, like, your journey through cancer was kind of astonishing. And just witnessing you go through that was kind of devastating for everyone who knew you, including me. But when you went through it, I'll never forget. And I still feel like I will have to apologize for this for the rest of my life. I remember hanging out with you a couple of times. You're like, my back is killing me. I'm in so much pain. I'm like, oh, it's just a muscle. Use your roller, use your, you know, and then like a month or two later, like, by the way, it's cancer. And that's, and I'm like, who's the jerk now? It's me. Like, I didn't even know that the kind of cancer you had could cause back pain. But when you were diagnosed, the community rallied around you and helped you and were there for you. And I think that's a testament to how much, obviously, people love Enzo first. Okay.
But then they were there for
much,
him.
Yeah. And how much you're loved. And beating cancer and being cancer free for 6 years for me is a miracle. Because, you know, I've witnessed your journey and seen you and loved you. And you're still so sunny and optimistic and bubbly and funny. It hasn't changed who you are.
Yeah. No, that's true. It's true. That was definitely, you know, when people talk about different versions of them, of themselves, I think when you reach a certain age, you can start looking back and marking those specific moments where you're like, that's when I was a new version of myself. And that was definitely a hard reset for me. And often people will look at COVID as like, that was kind of a hard reset for society in general. And my cancer journey was just prior to COVID. So that really did kind of reset things for me. And you're right. Talking about being loved, I really felt loved in that time. My best friend flew out from, she was living in San Francisco at the time. She flew out and my mom flew down from Maine, and I had gotten out of the, so when I was diagnosed, I went into the ER one evening because I was having so much pain. I was hallucinating. I was reaching a point of level of pain where my body couldn't take it anymore. And I was already maxed out on the milligrams of ibuprofen I could take just to get through my day. And we're talking this almost a year had gone by of dealing with this pain. And so I went into the ER and they ran a bunch of tests on me, and I got diagnosed while I was in the hospital. And it was just like, got diagnosed one day, I never left. They scheduled me for surgery the next day and then started chemo the third day after that. So by the time I got out of the hospital, my best friend flew out. My mom came down. It was just before Thanksgiving. And I just remember feeling this overwhelming sense of love. Like I needed help, and I didn't. Prior to that, I wasn't very good at asking for help or accepting it, I should say. I could ask for help, but I couldn't accept it. So I think it's the hardest. For some people, it's the hardest part of receiving help. And at that time, I didn't really have a choice. And being able to receive that was tremendous. And honestly, Kirsten, you were one of the friends that stepped up to the plate the most. And I just wanted to thank you. I know I've thanked you over the years for that, but you would show up and just spend time with me and show up and I think bring food.
And Enzo. Remember when I smuggled Enzo into the hospital?
You did. You did. Oh my gosh. So, dogs are not allowed in hospitals, right? But Kirsten took my little dog and like ran him up the stairs and plopped him on my hospital bed. Meanwhile, Enzo's like, where the hell am I? Where what is this room? What are these smells? Who are these people? I don't know what's going on. I don't know how you got away with it, but that was so.
I know. I think I wrapped him up in like a coat or a sweater or something. Yeah. And I just like, I knew the way to your hospital room. Oh my God. Remember when I showed up and you were supposed to get up and walk around the ward, and I wore a Oregon Trail t-shirt that said you died of dysentery. And we were walking around the cancer ward, and I was like, I think I wore the wrong t-shirt for this place. Although nobody was, you know, most doors were closed. Nobody was really looking at me, but later on I was like, this was not the right choice.
Oh my gosh. I do. Oh, that was so funny. Oh my gosh. Yeah, I met some really, miraculous people when I was getting chemo. I also remember that as well. I was an outpatient, so I would go in and I was able to leave. Some people were inpatient. They were in full-time care because they were, terminal. And oh my gosh, the human spirit, when you reach a point in your life where you know death is inevitable, is on it. To me, it's one of the most beautiful signs of the human spirit I've ever seen. You know, people were just, they're just so calm and loving and friendly and warm. And there's just like this energy, this aura that exists, that's around them, that is just joy and love. And it's, I got to meet some people that were there. I was probably the youngest person in the, on the floor that was receiving treatment. But yeah, the folks that I met there just wanted to know my story, wanted to know who I was, not just about cancer, but like, just wanted to get to know me. And we would play card games together. We would talk. I think about those people often. And I know a few of them are not with us anymore. And I just think about how grateful I am that I'm still here, and grateful that, you know, the cancer that I had was at a really low mortality rate. And so I'm grateful. I'm so grateful for that.
Well, I think I've heard it said that, you know, when really acutely confronted by our mortality or the idea of death, that's when people begin to, their spirits shine the brightest. It's, it's like this evanescent flickering or glimmering or kind of shout out to the universe, like, this is what's real. This, this beautiful glowing spirit, this clarification of what I'm going through. And we talked about that earlier before we started recording, because when you're going through cancer, like, kind of everything gets clarified, including the cancer, which is being hopefully destroyed by the chemo. But even the spirit gets clarified, because I think you begin to understand what's important in this world. And, you know, maybe holding grudges or being angry or being bitter, it, you reach this level. And I've never gone through this, so I don't want to speak for anyone or for you, but was that your experience?
In a way, yes, it was. So unfortunately, when I was diagnosed, I was in a pretty awful relationship with an individual who shall not be named. But yeah, that person was not a good support for me and took a lot of energy from me. And I remember reaching a threshold where I just couldn't do it. And I felt this physical weight just lifted off of me. And I don't remember if it was something somebody told me. I don't remember if I came to this conclusion on my own. I don't remember, because that whole time sort of, some things in that time frame kind of blend together, but I just remember feeling like I let it go. I let go of trying to keep this relationship together, which is pretty fucked up, honestly. Sorry, excuse my language, but pretty fucked up that this person was taking energy from me when I didn't have any to give. I let go of that person. I let go of that. You know, I wasn't angry. I I was able to receive love and affection and help in a way that I'd never done before. And I was going to share about my best friend that was living in San Francisco. She set up a GoFundMe to just make sure I could stay in my apartment and keep the lights on and the gas on, so I didn't turn into an ice cube in the winter. And somebody that I'd never met in my hometown, going back to talking about Maine and how people just share love, heard about my story, heard that I was going through chemo. And this is a like friend of my family's, but very distant friend. I didn't know who this person was. Not only did she donate money to my GoFundMe, but she wrote me a card that was so sweet and so touching, like complete stranger. I was so touched by that. I like didn't know what to do to say thank you. I wrote her a card in response. And I said, I've never met you, but I hope that I do one day. I just wanted to say thank you, that let alone the donation, just sending a card. It meant so much to me. And talking about it, even it feels good for me to know that people like that and that kind of gesture still exists in the world.
Yeah, great beauty. Great beauty to have a stranger reach out and acknowledge the struggle that you're going through, but say, I see you, I hear you. And here is like, I'm reaching out to let you know that you're not alone. And I think that's another amazing example of Maina's showing up.
Yeah. Yeah. Truly.
I just want to let you know that Drew has been such a fierce advocate for my podcast. And when I had the t-shirts made, he absolutely badgered me for a t-shirt and then took a photo with his delightful dog, Enzo. You can see it on my website because he wanted to promote the podcast and show me that he supports me. There will be a link to Drew's social media so you can check out just who he is and what kind of lifestyle he has. And also see some really adorable pictures of Oliver's favorite dog, Enzo the Magnificent. I want to thank everyone who listens. I'm so grateful. But if you could find it in your hearts to give me a rating or a review, I would so very much appreciate it. Those ratings and reviews help other people find us. Thank you for listening. And here's my one request. Be like Drew. Have an open heart when you look at the world. I mean, Drew has been through some really, really rough things, some really hard things, some really heartbreaking things. But still, no matter what, Drew orients himself towards the world, towards the universe, with an open heart and a belief that all will be well. And that takes practice. That is not an easy thing to act out in this great big world of ours. It's very difficult to keep the faith. It's very difficult to believe that the world has good things for you. It's very difficult to believe in other people when it seems like everyone is attacking each other all the time. But Drew has faith, not only in the world, but in all the other people he meets. He has an open heart, and he goes forward into the world just knowing that the world is going to meet him and bring him beautiful things. So be like Drew, face the world with an open heart, and with a heart so big that it absolutely can include everyone who wants to join you on your adventure. Because frankly, I can imagine no better army than Drew with his little dog Enzo and all of us following right behind them as we all go out to change the world.